Welcome to the Geeks of North podcast, a hobby and gaming podcast from La Belle Province, brought to you twice a month, every month. I'm your host, Paul Filio, here with my co-host, Antoine Bergeron. So why don't you sit back, relax, grab a paintbrush, and enjoy the show. Welcome to the Geeks of North podcast. I'm your host, Paul Filio, here with my co-host, Antoine Bergeron. Hey, Antoine, how's it going?
Going fine, you?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. It's nice to be back home from Gen Con.
Yeah, the trip was fine. The trip was really good, even I could say.
Well,
but it's good to be back.
Yeah, getting there wasn't so good for you. You had a little bit of trouble. We'll go into that when we get to the Gen Con segment of the show. So I guess we'll start off with hobby time. What have you been doing lately in the hobby? Anything interesting?
Oh, there wasn't that much with the 6 or 7 days of Gen Con because of the travel time. But I mentioned last time a Color Sergeant Major from Tor Gaming for the game Relics.
Right, right.
He's done. And I entered it in the little online contest and came up with the People's Choice for it. So the first prize, which was judged, was won by another local painter here, Yom.
Right, Yom Le Meshin. Yeah.
And I got the People's Choice, like the second place, we could say.
Well, it's not necessarily second place, right? It's the one the people like best. Maybe not first place in technical skill.
Yeah, but his couldn't be voted on for the People's Choice.
Because it already won.
Yeah,
right,
won. Because I'm pretty sure he would have gone it too.
I'm trying to make you feel better here, Antoine.
No, that's fine. I don't need that.
Your first place among all the rest.
Yeah, the first loser.
Well, your word's not mine.
apart else? From that, I'm working on a terrain project, and that is going well. I'm at the painting stage, but I can't mention more than that because it's a GIF that's a bunch of months late. The receiver already know I'm working on something, so I can say more than that. That's going well. And the only thing I did since we've come back from Gen Con is I got a pre-release model for Ords. Elgot the Conqueror, one of the Pharaoh's character, warlocks.
Ah, Miss Piggy.
I cleaned and assembled her yesterday.
Okay. How did that go together? Go together well? Or?
Oh, well, it's a two-piece model, so super easy. The only problem was that she has a spear, and the tip of the spear was already bent a bit and almost broken, so I had to cut it and pin it to be sure it didn't move. That's the only rough part I had to do.
Yeah, I find those long, slender pieces, when they get packed in the blisters, they often get bent, and there's just really no way around it, and the metal gets brittle. I mean, if I look at, since we're talking about Privateer Press, if I look at my Iron Fang Pikeman, you know, I've still got all the original spears. They haven't broken yet. But
you're lucky.
They're on the way. They're on the way to being broken.
Dudes ask for brass rods.
Yeah, I know. They don't ask, they beg.
Yeah, they beg. That's true. And you?
I was a little more prolific. Not tons more. But since last show, I assembled my Mirce Miniatures Jotun Magnir, which is kind of like a frost giant looking figure. I'm going to use that in my Warriors of Chaos army. Gorgeous fig, all resin. So really, really easy to pin and assemble because, you know, it cuts like butter.
That's a good thing.
Lots of little fiddly bits and no instructions.
Oh.
So you've got like pieces of hair like for the back of his head. Like he's got dreadlocks you have to glue on, but you don't know which order they go in. So you have to kind of try to fit them. And there's pieces of like his belt and there's little things that looked like broken off pieces of sprue or something, and I realized they're actually broken arrow shafts that go in these little holes drilled all over his body.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's like a lot of neat little details, but if you don't know what they are, and I lost the slip cover that had the picture of the finished model on it,
so
around the box.
Don't even have the picture, but it's probably available online.
Yeah, it's on their website, so I had to go hunting on MuseMinisters.com. What else we got? We got Dragon Ogres. So I assembled 2 boxes of Dragon Ogres. That's 6 Dragon Ogres with great weapons for my Warriors of Chaos army. And I think I'm going to get to painting those soon.
Those are plastic?
Yeah, those are completely plastic kits. Nice kits. You get a lot of options. Two weapons, great weapons. different heads. It was a nice kit. Can't really complain. I mean, all the new GW plastics are pretty nice. And I assembled some skinwalkers for Circle of Ouroboros. Because I've decided I'm going to build a faction, I'm going to have it painted, and I'm going to play it next year at TempleCon.
That's good. I mean, you play War Machine finally.
Yeah, well, Hordes, technically.
Oh, yeah. Warma Hordes.
Yeah, it's the same thing. I know. Probably just do Iron Arena, though. I don't think I'm going to enter an event, because, like, we know I'm not a competitive player, and I just... Iron Arena, I can play one game, walk away for 3 hours, go back, play another game. I don't think I have the stamina to play back-to-back-to-back games.
Well, you did that for Fantasy.
I did it for Fantasy Fest. That's true. And I survived it. But it was an experience. And I wanted to die the next day. But, you know, so I don't really want to do that again if I don't have to. I mean, I will for Fantasy Fest again this year. But
that's what I was going to say. Your Warrior of Chaos are exactly for that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And aside from that, I tried doing some two-brush blending. And, that went. I won't say it went well, but it went. The problem is having the right brushes for the job, too.
And the right paint, too.
Yeah, well, I was using Privateer Press Paint,
okay,
which is the paint for the job because of the liquid pigments. It makes it a lot easier to do it. I was fiddling with... Now, I got some new brushes at Gen Con, but I didn't want to use those for this. So I was fiddling with some old Rosemary & Company brushes that I had, and they were past their prime, so it didn't help. Anyway, so we'll come back to that at some point in the near future. I mean, I've got till February next year before TempleCon, so I got plenty of time to paint these guys.
Absolutely. You painted the 2,500 points of elves in 1 month?
Yeah.
Well, you have 35 points of War Machine to build in 4 or 5 months?
Well, I'm going to try to go for 50. Fine. But I've already got some of the circle built. So I've got a stalker, Warpwolf stalker, regular Warpwolf, and a feral Warpwolf, I think it's called, and the Pureblood already assembled and painted.
Oh, they are even painted.
They're painted. And I've got the Winter Argus, is that what it's called? And the regular Argus.
Yep.
Painted as well. And regular Kea. Though I don't think I'll use regular Kea.
That's almost 30 points already, so you're not missing it out.
Yeah, but it's all beasts. I mean,
but if you go with Kea, that's fine.
Really, see, I don't know much about the game, right? I built models that look cool.
Yeah, she's a beastcaster, so.
And I was going to build the skinwalkers first because I was going for a whole wolf/dog theme when I started buying stuff.
Yeah.
So I have like the Tharn Wolf Riders, and I've got.
There's a wolf solo too, if I remember correctly.
Yes, I have. There's the wolf solos. I've got those. And I've also got the Dragoon character, Morag? Wolflord Morag?
Wolflord Morag or something like that.
Yeah, so I've got him as well. And he's assembled from years ago, mostly. So we'll see. I'll try to make a viable list. I spent some time looking online to try to figure out what's a good list, or at least give me an idea. And of course, everyone's using all kinds of models I don't have now. And apparently there's a new Light War Beast that's the hotness for Circle. It's a Griffin or something, or... I don't know. I was looking at people who are talking about that. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what I come up with. I'll let you and Eom look at what I want to do. I'm sure you guys can advise me properly.
Oh, I don't know if I'll be able to say that. I don't play Circle and almost never play against Circle. So
yeah, but you listen to like 46 different podcasts, so I'm sure someone somewhere has talked about Circle.
Yeah, the only War Machine podcast I listen to is a hobby podcast. So. I don't think I have that much experience. Yom will be a better elf than
I have. Okay, well, we'll think of something. So what else do I have? Oh, I've got to assemble the unit attachment for the skinwalkers.
The alpha or something
like exactly. That? Yeah, exactly. I'd actually misplaced it in my room, but I found it. I found the blister.
That's good.
And, you know, speaking of blisters, remember I was talking about having to get some shifting stones?
Yeah,
it turns out I actually already own a set of shifting stones. I just didn't know I owned this. I found them brand new in the blister when I was looking for the alpha. Yeah.
I'm so surprised.
Shut up. Just saying, I thought it was funny because we almost bought those models at Gen Con, right? Those.
The one from Stonehaven.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And good thing I didn't.
Well, you would have two units.
True enough. And apparently there's a solo that goes with them that people use. Yes. A stone keeper or something.
Yes. I don't remember the name, but yeah, it's a druid.
Yeah, I don't know what he does, but... So I'll look into that as well.
A lot. For them.
Oh, good. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Gives the units stealth.
Oh.
And instead of being, I think, command 4, you got scaling 8, so you can spread the unit far more.
Oh, that does sound good.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good.
Okay, so mental, don't make an investment. There was another solo people were using, too. Now, I'm going to look like an idiot here because I should have done this research beforehand, but that's the problem with the Freeform podcast. We never know what we're going
to
say.
And we weren't supposed to go into Circle List building.
Well, yeah, either way, so. It's kind of hobby, right?
Yeah.
Sort of?
Yeah, it's tentative hobby.
Yeah, exactly. See? Yeah. Don't argue with me. So I'll just use my handy-dandy computer here and go to the Privateer Press website, which I'm sure all our listeners want to hear me do.
While you search, anything you want to work on in the next few weeks?
I've really got to get that Chaos Army done. So I want to finish my Demon Prince. I've still got a bit of stuff. I finished all the metallics on my... Well, that's the other thing I did, actually. I forgot to mention that. So I finished all the metallics on my Skull Crushers of Khorne. So I got two units of three. So they're all done. And I finished... I think I completely finished my warriors now, too. So I just got to do the bases.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. I just got to decide what I want to do on the bases. I mean, the warriors, it's hard because they take up so much of the base. It's really hard to put any detail on it.
Yeah, so you
I can maybe put a couple little tufts of grass, and that's about it.
Better to go for something pretty basic.
But the thing is, then you look at something like the Skull Crushers, they have these giant bases with nothing underneath them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can put a rock. Which is what I did with the first one I got completed.
Yeah, it looked good.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I just find it misses something. It's not a super detailed base. And it shouldn't matter to me. I'm not doing this to win awards.
No, it's not a contest mini. It's for
an army. I know, but all the same, it bugs me. Don't ask me why.
And apart from dudes working on your circle, probably?
I'll maybe assemble stuff. The circle's going to get worked on after the Chaos Army is done, because Fantasy Fest is first.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantasy Fest, I think, is probably late October, early November.
Yeah, we haven't got a date yet, but...
So, you know, I want to make sure that's done and ready to go, so I don't have to, like, pound through to the last minute and, like, speed paint everything and then want to kill myself again. So, the model I was thinking of was Una the Falconer.
Oh, yeah, the new Lizard Warlock. Lesser Warlock?
Oh, is that what she is?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
And she can get the Griffins.
Okay. Because she's a stunning model. A little too busy, I would say.
Yes.
Because there's just stuff everywhere. You know, but if you take the Falcons out of the picture, and there's like three of them on her, I think, or four even, you know, just herself looks amazing.
Yep.
So maybe depending on how many pieces she comes in, maybe I can remove some Falcons.
Yeah. They're part of the model. She even got rules for them.
Well, she can have...
You don't need four.
There's a falcon on her arm, and then she has two resting on her staff. If the ones in the staff are separate pieces that are, you know, glued on, maybe they just won't make it to the model, the final product.
Yeah, I see.
You see where I'm going with that? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I think that's about it. Why don't we take a little break, and we'll come back and talk about what we've got for upcoming events in the area.
That's good.
Okay, be right back, guys. And we're back. So, let's see. What's next on our list of things to do? Upcoming events. Chaos Ludzik. Why don't you tell us about that, Antoine? I know you're involved in that.
Yeah, and we already mentioned it in the last episode. It's it's a big event run by mostly, well, run in partnership with the Norton Defenders group. It's 2-day wargaming events. We're running multiple tournaments, Fantasy, 40K, War Machine, Infinity. And we might be adding something else.
Oh?
Some of the tournaments aren't getting as much attendance as we hoped for. while others are already full. So we might just reduce some of the places in some of them and switch them for another system, or just get, like, the fantasy single is already at 29 places out of 30.
Okay, so make some more places for that.
Yeah, make some places for that.
And well, Northern Defenders is a big fantasy group, right? That's their main focus, I think.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so, okay. And if I had to hazard a guess, I'm guessing it's Infinity that's not selling out like you expected.
Yeah, and 40K. 40K got a big sign-up for the double event, but not for the single.
Because doubles is more casual, right? And I think
maybe, or it's also a two-day event, so not everyone is able to attend to both days.
Yeah, so. And it's funny because Montreal has a fairly good 40K community.
Yeah.
But they're scared of participating in the tournament scene.
Yeah.
It's strange. It's the way it is. I know I was part of that community. I have my own reasons for not participating in tournaments, but they're not even willing to try. It's kind of
odd. Yeah, it's kind of strange. So that is coming October 11th and October 12th in Montreal. And you can find more info about that at chaosludic.net, chaosludik.net. Next event, we're looking at Game Summit 2014. That's in the Ottawa-Gatineau region.
Okay.
They had a lot of tournaments in the past years, but this year I think they're going only for War Machine Hordes and High Command events, or it's all I was able to find.
Okay.
I know they have a bunch of board games and
other games. Yeah, well, that's what really was focused on originally, right? I think the miniature gaming was added later in recent years.
Yeah, but they still have a big 40K group usually and stuff like that.
Right.
But I was only able to find the War Machine events.
Okay.
But you might hear about the event further into the podcast, or maybe you already have heard
the event. Yeah, so. And it's interesting that they're doing. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. It's interesting that they're doing High Command. You know, I haven't seen a lot about High Command since it launched last year. I know that they've just launched an expansion.
Oh, it's the fourth or fifth expansion.
Yeah, but yes, it's the fourth, fifth. But they just launched a new one, right? I think that Gen Con, I think, was
There is a huge. I couldn't say huge, but there's a big community of War Machine and all Privateer Press stuff in Gatineau. They have a specialized gaming club that do run events and stuff like that. So part of the tournament, that's not one that's open to participation, but they have a six-month tournament league.
Okay, that builds up to a final event.
That builds up to the final event, which will be held on the Sunday of Game Summit.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
And they have a master, a young blood on Saturday, and on Sunday they have a spell draft War Machine tournament.
Okay. And actually, one thing I wanted to ask you about Chaos Ludic, and Game Summit, if you know, are there any painting competitions this year? I know Chaos Ludic in the past has had some.
Yeah, we stopped doing that when we went to the only tournament format.
Okay.
We have painting requirement or prize for
Best Painted Army or whatever.
For the tournaments themselves, but we don't have an open painting tournament like we had in the past.
Okay.
And I can say for Game Summit, I knew they had that in the past too, but with the I don't know if they still have the same presence for miniature stuff.
Okay.
So they might not have it anymore.
Oh, all right.
So Game Summit is held on September 27th and 28th in Gatineau. You can find more information about that on gamesummit.ca.
Alrighty. And last but not least, a little pet project of mine. So I'm sure our listeners have heard of Meg Maples from Arcane Paintworks. She's an ex-studio painter from Privateer Press. Won multiple awards, Gen Cons, Crystal Brush entries. And she's a pretty... outspoken blogger, forum member. She has a good Facebook community too. And she tours teaching masterclasses. And she will be coming to Montreal to teach her masterclass here at Gamers Vault from December 6th to 7th. Total cost is $205 US for both days combined. So that's 8 hours on Saturday, 8 hours on Sunday, with a 1.5 hour break during the day. So it's pretty intensive. You have to bring your own supplies. So there's just going to be a supply list posted on our Facebook, on the Geeks of the North Facebook. And also, I'll get something posted up on Gamers Vault about that. And we should see that go live on Meg's blog at Arcane Paintworks within the next day or two.
Oh, you went fast on that.
Yeah, well, she's moving to Australia. So when I contacted her when I got back from Gen Con, and it really came down to a time thing where she's like, well, once I'm gone, it's going to be tough to organize something back in North America.
Yeah, and the cost would
just be higher. Yeah, so there's a minimum 15 people that have to attend the class to make it happen.
Okay.
When I did my initial survey, we seemed to have about 10 serious people interested, and that's without really trying. So given that we've got a couple months to get all the registrations done, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be able to do this.
Is there a cutoff date to confirm?
I haven't got the information from Meg yet.
Okay.
I'm assuming there will be. I'm assuming that she'll have to know at least a few weeks in advance. But I think it really should be an interesting class, and I don't see any reason why we can't make it happen.
No, I don't see it either.
And you know, she's famous for her two brush blending, and that's the main focus of the class.
Okay.
So I think it's a great skill, and it's an all skill levels class, and she covers everything from prepping models, priming models properly, and believe it or not, there's actually a technique to priming. We all do it wrong, by the way, but that's okay. So the two-brush blending, hair, fur, and if there's time, she covers topics like, gore and blood splatter, painting reds. She also does flesh tones. She covers flesh tones as well. So it's really going to be worthwhile, I think, for the painting community, which we have a pretty strong painting community here in Montreal.
Yeah, absolutely. So if people are interested, they should contact us on the Facebook page.
Yep, so they can... I'll be posting on our Facebook page tonight about it, and you'll be paying Meg directly through her PayPal.
Okay.
So once we've got the links to everything, I'll put it up on our Facebook, and I'll start really pounding the pavement, as they say, looking for people to sign up. Right now, it's early days.
Yeah.
I just got confirmation from her tonight that these are the dates she wants to do it, and that everything's good to go. So convenient enough, I told her I'd mention it in the podcast tonight. Yeah, so once that information's at hand, I'll post it, and we should see it. I guess we should see it go live on Meg's blog in the next day or two.
Okay. And for dudes who don't have access to Facebook, for be it their choice or their workplace choice, they can contact us at our website geeksofthenord.com or by email at geeksofthenord@gmail.com.
And just so they know, Meg's website is arcanepaintworks.blogspot.ca.
So that's all for the upcoming events. Next topic. Right,
so moving on to news. And it's something I'm really excited about. He's back, baby. So, Warhammer Fantasy, the Rise of Nagash.
The giant clown is back.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't look like a clown so much anymore. I think that new model looks pretty badass. We've seen some leaked photos.
Yeah, I saw someone mentioning that it's the fantasy version of Dr. Octopus.
Octopus. Well, he's got some kind of bony tendril things going on, I admit. But it's a cool model with a pretty brutal price tag at $130 Canadian.
Yes.
But it's a big kit, and I'm not here to complain about GW's pricing. They charge what they charge, and if we pay it, we pay it. If we don't, we don't. That's not the point. The point is it's a good-looking kit, I think. And it's not only is it the kit, there's a whole rule supplement along with it called End of Times Nagash, or End Times Nagash, I should say. And that's going to have a $100 retail.
Oh, wow.
It's a two-book, two hardcovers, one fluff book, one rule book.
Okay, it's a pretty big book then.
Yeah, I think the fluff book is 200 and... I would say it's like 294 pages. And then there's a rule book that's almost another 100 pages. This is the same price point we saw for Triumph and Treachery.
Yep.
Which, if you read it, it's probably worth every penny for the fun you can have with it.
And I saw pictures of other stuff. Are they all releasing around that supplement?
Yeah, so there's Manfred von Karstein.
Okay.
So he's coming out in a kit. And I think that same kit also makes Nefarida, the Queen of the Lamian Vampires.
Okay.
And there's also some new Spirit Host models coming out that look really cool. They're kind of wispy, all floating out of the base. So a lot of people seem most excited about that. I don't know what the... I never looked at what the Vampire Count's regular Spirit Host models look like now. But everyone's excited about these plastic ones, so I guess it must be pretty terrible.
Wasn't there also a kind of a... Like, infinite... monstrous infantry with wings or something like that.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I don't know what that is.
Okay,
but I did see that, and I don't see it on the GW release list for
next
week.
So it's probably in the upcoming weeks.
That's instead. Right.
Okay.
And of course, we've got a new lore of magic with this book too, right?
Yeah,
the lore of undeath.
Undeath.
Which the rumor says it's going to be accessible to everyone.
Well, that's in the leaked picture of the White Dwarf, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't read through all the text, so I don't know. I mean, I just know what I've read in the blurbs afterwards. And it seems like everyone's going to be able to summon undead.
Yay.
Yeah, well. I mean, I think this is going to be kind of like Triumph and Treachery or... What's the apocalypse for fantasy called?
Storm of Chaos?
Storm of Magic.
Oh, yeah.
Storm of Magic. Storm of Chaos was the event that they retconned.
Apocalypse is probably more akin to the legendary battles or something like
okay,
that.
Okay, well, you knew what I really meant. Played. Yeah, you knew what I meant. Okay. So it's going to be kind of like Storm Magic where, you know, like it's aimed at big games.
Yeah, it's a special format.
And it exists outside of the regular rule set. Yeah, exactly, a special format. So I don't think it's going to break anything or destroy anything. I don't know how I feel about High Elves summoning undead to fight. Like I think that's weird, and maybe that won't happen. Right? Yeah, we'll have to wait and see what the final rules are.
Yeah, but the big games, I'm not so sure, because I saw they changed the army construction rules to Lord character. You can have up to 50%.
Right, and the gash comes in at 1,000 points, right?
So you can play him at 2,000 instead of 4,000. That's a big difference.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it does let you play other big characters too, right?
Yes, like yes.
Thorgrim, Grudgebearer, or whatever, and all these, you know, 600-700 point characters. That
yeah, or Malekit on his dragon for the Dark
Archaon on the steed or whatever.
So we'll see what they do. You'll get it anyway, so I'm sure we'll have more information.
I don't know what you're
that.
Talking about. I certainly didn't pre-order it already. Quiet you. Okay, what else is out? Grey Knights. Grey Knights get a relaunch. So they... I've got the codex. I haven't opened it yet because I picked it up tonight. It's in my car.
That's the only new thing, I think. The other is just reboxing?
Yeah, reboxes of the models. I haven't seen any new models yet. I don't think there's going to be any new models. I know the models got repackaged, so they were units of 5. Now they're units of 10, which makes sense because why would... You'd never field a unit of 5 unless you're putting them in a Razorback. I don't know. I haven't looked through the book, like I said, but rumor was that they're losing Inquisition units.
Yeah, I heard that too.
So I guess it makes sense that since there's the Inquisition supplement that you can buy.
Yeah, but wasn't there just two and three in the supplement? Like the Inquisitor and the Henchman? Was it the assassins weren't in there?
No, they're getting their own thing because they can keep selling us separate books, right?
So too many different books for me. But,
yeah, that's exactly the way they want it. So there's going to be an assassins supplement, like there used to be. If you recall correctly, if you go back to like fourth ed or third ed, it was a white dwarf like
second. The one I have is second ed.
Yeah, but they had a codex in second ed.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and third ed, it was just a little. It was a quote unquote codex, but it was actually a supplement. Like it was inside a white dwarf, and you had to take the staples out of the center of the white dwarf, and you pulled out this little tiny codex format book.
No, I don't remember that. Yeah. I remember the second ed one. I have it somewhere in the box.
Yeah, you can always tell a second ed codex by the bright colors.
Yeah,
ample use of yellow. Everything is yellow. Hard to miss on the shelf. Anyway. So, yeah, they get a bit of a change, and they lost some characters because GW's continue with their policy of, if we don't have a model, you don't get a character for it.
Yeah.
And that's just another way of protecting their IP, because they don't want people making stuff. I remember when they used to encourage us to make stuff. Oh, well. So, looking forward to that. Love Grey Knights. Cool-looking army. I don't know how effective they're going to be. Now that they keep losing units, but...
Well, you can ally everything now, so... I don't think it's that bad.
That's just it, right? That's what that's really how they want us to play.
Okay. So next element of interest here, the new faction for Drop Zone Commander by Hawk War Game is coming out.
Yes, the Resistance. So they come out August 30th, I think is their launch date. And we got to see those at Gen Con.
Yeah.
Wow.
Fantastic models.
Antoine's in love with the helicopters.
Most of those were already previewed since last year, I think, or since Gen Con.
So we saw... I don't think we saw the dropships last year.
No, it was...
I saw probably, the infantry and like the ramshackle trucks and stuff. Yeah. Those were out.
Which are fine in my view, but what we didn't see is that there's a big military arm to that faction.
Yeah.
And Dew's model are
the tank,
nice.
Best tank in the game, apparently.
I don't mind the tank. The copters.
Yeah, I know. Oh, you're in love with the helicopters. Yeah, so they looked awesome.
Yeah.
And the dropships that look like just giant flatbed trucks with engines, basically. The drop... this is a platform with like a frame.
Yeah, but aren't the... I don't have the name. Aeroglissar.
Like hover ships? Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. They have a giant tire under or something like that.
Oh, are they like...
Yeah, I think they are.
Hovercraft?
Ground transport. Yeah, hovercraft. Yeah.
Oh, could be. I thought they just flew in and dropped... It looked like something out of 40K, right? Yeah,
because they do have...
In 40K, you don't need to be aerodynamic.
Flying carriers.
Yeah.
But they also have the hovercraft.
Okay, that could be. That could be it was a hovercraft. That would make sense.
Yeah.
So I just assumed he was taking a page out of the GW aerodynamics rulebook. I have a brick. Let's put four motors on it and small wings. With a pilot sticking out the top, that'll fly.
Yeah, it does.
With enough thrust, anything flies.
Yeah. Just the copters will probably make me buy the game, get in that game finally.
Well, I do have a Games and Gears board coming for it eventually, whenever they decide to build it and ship it. And I do have an army, so I'd be willing to play with you. It's a fun game. It is a fun game, good rule set. Dave's a good guy to support, so I have no problems playing his game. Let's see. Other points of interest. Actually, I'm just going to jump around a little bit, Antoine.
Yep, no problem.
So let's go to the War Machine. So the Cephalix release. What do you think about that?
Another sub-faction for the mercenaries.
Okay.
Based on an ally unit that was already out for Krix.
Krix allies, yeah. They came out a couple of years back.
Yeah. So I don't know if... some of those have already been out in pre-release since June at Lock and Load, which is the
big PP event, right?
Yeah, the big PP sponsored event. But I haven't seen the rules or anything, so I don't know if they can be used as allies, like the basic Drudge unit,
or if they're only part of a contract or whatever.
So I think they're only part of the contract, and they can use the existing Cephalix unit, but it will. Get more diversity to the mercenaries player, which is only good.
Yep.
They have a very different look and feel than the rest of the factions. So
definitely. Very dark.
That's good. Yeah. Dark and gritty and bloody.
Creepy.
And
very Borg-like in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So right now we have a caster, a unit, and a heavy monstrosity, which is their war beast type thing or warjack equivalent.
Yeah. And that's the... Three kit combo box.
Yeah, so it's like any of the other basic jack plastics. Yep. So it makes three. Okay. We have a new starter for Dystopian Legion.
Yeah, and in that starter will be the long-awaited version 2.0 of the rules.
Oh, nice, because those version 1 rules... I mean,
the first rules were beta.
Yeah.
So they probably should have...
Which is what we got at TempleCon 2 years ago.
1.0 instead of 2.0 on the book. But yeah, that's what we had in... That's what is in the starter and on the website. So we'll finally have updated rules and see if they corrected the morale that was a bit hard to play around.
And it's Spartan, right? Spartan's not known for having the best written rule books. So
yeah, no.
I won't hold my breath. Don't get me wrong. They make great stuff. I love their models.
And the concept and of the rules are good, for a lot of but the writing is pretty bad usually, especially in the first versions.
Well, I think it's because they have an idea, but they have a hard time translating that idea to paper. It makes me think of a local company that we won't mention. And And back to that, something I just wanted to mention. I came across this on Kickstarter.
Oh, just before you go to that, we'll just mention the new starter has two new factions for Dystopian Legions. Right. There's the Covenant of Antarctica and the Republic of France.
Yeah, a lot of people have been waiting for France.
Yeah, and the model looks like inspired by French Légion Étrangère. I don't know the name
Strange
of that.
Strange Legion? I don't know what that is. Sorry. Yeah, I'm being Anglophone. I've got no idea of this one.
It's they're a military elite that go into desert and all extreme stuff. So
Foreign Legion.
The Foreign Legion, yeah.
So, sorry. Étrangère, that's what it's called.
For Légion étrangère. Étrangère being foreign. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Not weird Legion.
Yeah, sorry. I completely mistranslated that. I was thinking of the wrong word. Yeah.
So the models look really nice. I'm not big on to the Antarctican, but there are robots, and I'm not that big in robots, but the Legionnaire
are they robots are in disguise? Really cool.
There's already robots in disguise in that game, so maybe I can't say.
Yeah, you know, I actually own, for Dystopian Wars, the Conan of Antarctica, bought a bunch of models, and then looked at them all and went, why am I playing a faction with giant crab things? What is this? And then I went to play Russia.
Yeah, so that's all I wanted to mention, so you can go back to your other item.
Oh, yeah, sorry. So, yeah, I was browsing Kickstarter, and I saw a sneak peek of something coming, which I thought was pretty cool. So Antoine backed the Happy Seppuku stamp Kickstarter.
Yeah, the texture stamps.
Last year, I think it was.
Yes.
They made these great stamps that you can put some green stuff in or whatever putty you want to use and basically make custom base inserts, custom terrain pieces, whatever. And they're fantastic. And they were a really good value. And now they're going to make a two-part mold system that you can use like Fimo, like stuff you bake, plaster or whatever, to make floor tiles, dungeon accessories, doors, so you can build like your dungeon for D&D map.
So something akin to the Earthstarts molds.
Yep, except two parts and not using plaster. So the problem with plaster, it's very brittle. This will be brittle too, but it's also costly.
But plaster is pretty cheap, but if you want to do dental plaster...
If you want to do good plaster, right, that's got more rigidity to it and higher density...
That costs
money.
More.
This is super, super low cost.
The Fimo is low cost, but other capacity are not.
Yeah. And I don't see... I'm trying to remember... Does Hearthstarts do any two-part molds? I don't think so. Because these are two parts. So you have textures on both sides.
I think they're all flat.
They're all flat molds, right?
Yeah.
So this will let you do a double-sided object without having to do two casts or have two pieces that you stick together.
Yeah, that's true. All the barrels and stuff like that I have from this art are two parts that you need to glue.
So this is a two-part mold, silicone, shove it in the oven, bake it, pull it out, mold cooled a little bit, pull the pieces apart, and you've got a double-sided floor tile, double-sided doors. So, you know, first thing I thought of when I saw it, Super Dungeon Explorer.
Yeah.
Or using it maybe to build boards for Endless Fantasy Tactics.
Yeah.
You know, because you make a 10 by 10, you know, sheet of the stuff, which is going to be 10 squares by 10 squares because it's all etched. You know, you could still put that on top of foam and make your layers in foam and just put this as the top layer to give yourself the squares you need for movement and spell effects and whatever. So I think it's going to be pretty neat. So I think I'm going to have to back that.
Yeah, I need to check that. You mentioned it, but I didn't.
Yeah, well, it's not launched yet. They just did a sneak peek video.
But still.
And it looked pretty cool.
I'm a fan of their stuff, so I'll take a look.
Yeah, you know, it should be pretty reasonably priced too, I think. I mean, the last Kickstarter that we backed was quite reasonable. All right. So why don't we take a little break? We'll come back and we'll talk about Gen Con.
They gather in the Northlands, preparing for battle. Each at the head of a great army, bent on the destruction of all others. Before the snows claim the battlefield, the foe will be met, and only one will survive. Meet them on the field of battle, September 27th and 28th. Game Summit 2014 registration is now open at gamesummit2014.eventzilla.net.
And welcome back, everyone. So, Gen Con, main topic for tonight's discussion. So, we're just going to go kind of day by day what we did. It's a quick overview, guys. We're not going into the minutiae. There's a lot of stuff at Gen Con. We could spend days and days and days describing it. And really, there's no point because 8 million other bloggers have already done it.
Yeah.
So, we'll just go over what we saw and what we did and try to make it lighthearted and fun. And, you know, hopefully you'll stick with it. Okay, so Gen Con, we flew on Wednesday
yep.
into Indianapolis. My flight was uneventful. I got there at like 2:30 in the afternoon. Antoine, why don't you tell us your story?
My first flight going from Montreal was not canceled, but pushed back 4 hours. So they have us rescheduled to another flight, which left only 10 minutes later, which was fine.
Okay.
So that flight went well once we were in the plane and all sorted out. But then when we got in New York at the JFK airport,
right,
the other flight was delayed, the transit. So overall, if I stuck with flight. My base flight, I would have gotten there at the same time with the delay than the second flight.
Oh.
Yeah, so the trip, which overall, that's 2.5 hours of flight.
3 hours, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. It took me 13 hours.
Ah. But don't stop there, Antoine. I think there's a little bit more to that story.
Oh, the last part? I wouldn't have mentioned it.
Yeah, I'm not going to let you forget that.
Getting at the airport, it's late at night. We landed around 11:30, midnight, something. Yeah, it was
around
like
there
that.
When you texted me.
So there's nobody at that airport at that time. It's really empty. So I get to the transport section for outbound transport for
right.
Bus and taxis and stuff like
that. Yeah, the ground transportation section. Yeah.
So look at the texting with Paul back and forth to be able to know what I need to do, where do I get my tickets, and look for the shuttles. And I finally find a shuttle that's going to the Crown Plaza where we were staying, get on there, and end up at an hotel. And when I tried to find Paul in the hotel, they don't have him registered there. So, oh, that's not good. And then the girl asked me the dreaded question, could he be at the downtown hotel? Which I answered, oh, I didn't know there was two Crown Plaza. And is there a shuttle to the downtown one? No, there isn't.
Yeah. And, you know, in my defense, I had sent Antoine the voucher for the hotel. So it actually, I think, mentioned that it was the downtown Crown Plaza.
No, the voucher didn't. But there was an address on it. But when I
took the
shuttle, there was no mention of the shuttle was going to a special one either. So I get on the shuttle, but it's not the right address, but I didn't know before going to the hotel. So I should have checked.
Oh, okay.
Before, but...
So yeah, by the time you actually got to the hotel, it was like 1 a.m. or something?
Yeah, 1 a.m. I was finally there. I didn't have dinner yet, so...
So luckily the Steak and Shake is open 24 hours.
Yeah, at least.
So we had a $4 hamburger meal. It's kind of scary that you can get a whole meal for $4 there.
Yeah.
I don't know what's in those burgers.
Not a lot.
It may have been meat. I'm not sure.
Yeah, the meat was pretty slim.
Yeah. And well cooked.
Yeah, too.
So then you finally get checked in, get some food, go to bed. Thursday morning.
Well, before going to bed, we got our badges at the will call booth.
Oh, right. We did end up going to convention center. There was only 24 hours this year.
Yeah. Being in Canada, we can get the badge shipped. So we had to pick them up at the convention center.
Right. And we were surprised that there was actually a lineup.
Yeah.
Because it was like
1 a.m.
Yeah, exactly. At 1 a.m. there was a line. The line went fast.
Yeah.
It was about 15 minutes or something. But it was a good sized line. It was a little frightening.
Yeah, and it was only announcing what was going to be or the rest of the week. The
yeah. trip.
People.
Yeah, lots of lines, lots of people.
Yeah, people.
Yeah. So then Thursday. Thursday, the hall opened at 10 a.m.
Yeah, 9 for the for VIPs.
VIP, or VIGs.
VIGs, yeah, VIGs.
And game VIGs stores and media. Yeah. Thursday was kind of our first shopping experience.
Yeah.
We did a lot of what we call ninja shopping for people, which is basically, picking up crap for other people that we didn't actually want ourselves, but we have to lug back home.
Yeah. And even then, we didn't do that much because stuff sold out so fast.
And the lineups were so long.
Yeah.
Like, we never made it into the Fantasy Flight booth. It was,
never. Nope.
And people, we're not avid D&D players, but or Pathfinder players, but the Paizo booth was insane lineups.
Yeah, the line went out of the event hall.
Yeah, out of the hall. Yeah, and it's down the hall. Yeah, out of the exhibit hall, down the hall in the convention center. And it was like that all weekend.
Yep.
Every time I went by, there was a lineup outside waiting to get into that damn booth. I don't know what they were. I don't know if they were distributing crack or what. Anyway, D&D players, it's kind of a drug. So let's see. We stopped by Badger's booth, spoke to Ken for a bit.
Yep.
Ken is a sarcastic man. I love him. I love him, and he makes a great product. But he is pure evil.
It was fun to see you squirm. I'm not used to see you.
Well, I'm usually the sarcastic one, right?
So,
and I can't slap him because I don't know him that well. So I just put up with it. What had happened was I'd actually emailed Ken earlier in the year about having something picked up for me by a friend at Adepticon. Because Badger is one of Adepticon's sponsors. And Ken had replied to me after Adepticon saying, oops, I missed your email. But let me know what you want and I'll get you a con price and I'll take care of you. And then a bunch of stuff came up in my life and I didn't get back to him. And for some reason, I thought of it the week before Gen Con that I never responded to Ken. So I went to Gen Con. The first thing I did was I apologized. I'm like, you know, I know you actually replied to me and I'm sorry I never got back to you. And he gave me this whole speech about, you know, I've been wondering why I haven't slept since Adepticon. Something's been bothering me. My wife says I'm not the same man and I don't know what it is. And thank you, Paul. That's finally it. It all clicks now. You know, I was so hurt by you not replying to it. Anyway, it went on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
And I would have kicked him in the knees, except I wanted to buy stuff. So, I picked up, anyway, after he finished belittling me, I picked up another Sotar 2020 airbrush. Because I love that thing.
You had a great special on it.
Yeah, it was $75.
Wow.
It's a single needle version, so it's not like the ones we bought before that had a backup needle. But great little airbrush. And I love that thing to pieces. Of all my airbrushes, I use that one the most. And I thought it'd be good to have a second one so I can do two colors without having to, if I'm doing a unit, whatever, I don't have to switch and dump my airbrush out every time.
We got both also the new Minitar primer.
Oh, it's actually not labeled. It's not branded
Minitar. No. Okay.
It is branded Steinolix. Steinolres. So, styrene, vinyl, resin. Steinolres. Okay. So, it's a specially formulated primer. It's supposed to have very, very strong bonding properties. So, I'm looking forward to trying that out. I haven't gotten a chance yet.
Me neither.
I know Matt Fontaine did a blog post about it, and he says it's all he's going to use now. Of course, he's sponsored by Badger, so he kind of has to say that, but and generally speaking, Badger makes good products. The miniature paints have been great. And I'm looking forward to trying this out because I've been using the Vallejo primer, and it's got good coverage, but I find it doesn't grip very well. It doesn't have a lot of bite to it, and it chips off the model fairly easily, is what I've noticed.
Being there, they also shared a booth with, give me 1 minute, Brush for Ire Miniatures, and they do airbrushing stencils. So yep. I got two packs of dues, and I think you got some too.
Yeah, I went back at a later date. So you got, I'm not sure it's actually a Canadian company, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, because Ken was making fun of he and I being Canadians and how he was surrounded. So yeah, you got which ones now?
I got the Hazard Stripes
right? And
the Checkerboard.
Okay, and I picked up two different scales of Urban Camo. Digital Camo, I should say. Not Urban Camo, Digital Camo. So that should be pretty cool. Probably do that on my IG when I eventually get around to painting them in the list somewhere. Shut up. I tell you to shut up a lot in this podcast, don't I? Jeez.
You do.
I'll have to think of some more creative things to say to you. So who else did we talk to? Oh, we spoke to Kevin.
Kevin Clark. Yeah.
Formerly of Privateer Press, formerly of Cool Mini or Not, now with Iron Box.
Yeah. Which is a board game studio comprised of Kevin and Mr. Justin from Secret Weapon Miniatures.
Well, I think it's a subdivision of Secret
Weapon. It's a subdivision of Secret Weapon, yeah.
Right, and they were talking and showing off their game...
Fill in the blank. Blank.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the game was just released on Kickstarter. Yeah, I didn't try it. It's by the same game, same designer who did the Rabbit Quest of the Magic Carrot, Rabbit game, something like that. I'm not a big fan of it. I know some people are crazy about it. It's not of my own taste, but I like the sheep game. They did the
Angry Sheep. We had a lot of fun playing that for a simple game.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. Definitely recommend people check that out, Angry Sheep.
Yep. It's a small round tin.
It fits easily into a small bag plastic, or a purse. Your wife can bring it everywhere for you to play board games with her when you're bored. And Kevin's always good for a laugh.
Oh, absolutely.
He has almost zero filter. And he will tell you exactly what he thinks of you, your product, anything. Yeah, he's quite the character. And I first met him, I guess, 2 or 3 years ago at TempleCon, and he knows you.
He
knows who I am. He doesn't really know me, but he knows you.
Yeah.
A great guy, lots of fun. Yeah. He and I had an interesting discussion about Restic, basically. About how the Privateer Press uses that material and how it's a great material and how everyone who hates it is just retarded and doesn't know how to clean miniatures.
I wasn't.
You weren't there for that. No, you were waiting in line at Privateer Press at the time.
At that time, okay.
Yeah. It was funny. And of course, there was a couple caveats to that, like, the newer material, rather the newer molds made for that material, the mold lines are in better places than the original Privateer Press molds. So, not that notwithstanding, generally speaking, the product is good and it's the right material. Anyway, we came up because we were discussing Relic Knights.
There's a prize going with the material too, that you couldn't have the same with the Game Workshop plastic, probably because Dew's mold cost a lot, even more than the rustic ones.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think the rustic molds are more akin to what the old metal molds were,
Something like
as versus the high. The high-pressure injection molding that that GW uses. Anyway, back on topic. Yes. Sorry about that.
So speaking of line, I did the line at their Privateer Press boot. That line was... I thought it was maybe only 30 minutes, but Paul tells me that I don't have enough time, and it was more around an hour.
Well, I know you were probably chit-chatting with people around you and didn't really care.
It's true. And I was reading the program, looking all the pony events I could for you.
Yeah. Had to mention the ponies,
eh? I had.
Yeah, my wife's a little obsessed with My Little Pony. Antoine kept bugging me about it, trying to get me to go to pony events so I could take pictures and tell her all about it when I got home.
You missed the pony musical.
Yeah, I'm sad. Really. No, really. Okay.
So I had a bunch of ninja shopping to do there. And even doing that on the first day, I think I got in line around noon or something like that. And even then, most of the stuff was already, most of the stuff people wanted was already sold out. Like the special Bay model was already out. The Legion of Everblight in
the Ram model. Yeah,
The same one that's
Blighted Bather.
Yeah, Blighted Bather. She was already out. Epic Xerxes was out. Epic Epsilonia was out. So stuff.
And keep in mind, Thursday is the least busy day.
Yeah. So I don't know if they just miscalculate or they just don't want to flood the market with dues.
Well, they'll be available at next event too, right?
Yeah.
Because every year they have these. I think at every major event they go to, they sell these models.
Yes.
So it's not a. It's not really a limited edition. Yeah. It's just kind of limited releases.
Yeah, but the Blighted Bather was also available when you ordered online during the convention. So it's not that limited. But the two Epic Warlocks that sold out on the first day, that was a bigger hit.
Well, those were pre-releases, right? So, yeah. But they'll be coming to market in the next month or two, probably.
Yeah, I got the Elgata Conqueror model, which I mentioned in the hobby section. So I'm a big Faro proponent. So
you like your bacon?
Oh yeah, I like the bacon. I got that some pins and stuff for
the pins were pretty awesome.
Yeah.
My little chibi Resnik and Morvana.
Yeah, Morvana. And I got you got this because I wanted the chibi Borka and he only comes in a pack, so I had to buy the whole pack for only one pin I wanted. So Paul got some and the other two I've found a local player happy to get them.
Yeah, mine will end up on my War Machine Battle Foam bag. Let's see. Games and Gears. So we went and talked to our buddy Sam.
Yep.
And got to look at his wares. So he was actually selling a Ichiban Studio Gen Con Limited Release Special Edition brush.
Yep.
Which was a size 0.
Which is the same size as one that was in the Kickstarter.
Yes, and it's the same brush that's in the Kickstarter. It's the Klinsky Sable one. But it was just it had a silver casing instead of black. And it was, Gen Con release only. You'll have to pardon me, folks. I've got a bit of a cold, so I'm struggling here. Try not to cough in your ears. So that was cool. He also did the release of the Inn. So he had a resin terrain piece, a multi-level Inn with a Gen Con sign in the front of it. So it was the Gen Con edition.
Yep.
It's
big.
It is very big.
Yeah.
Nice piece of resin terrain. So there was that. He was showing, of course, his Games and Gears battle boards. Which someday will ship.
Someday.
Yeah. At least he's good communication-wise. Like, we know the factory flooded, and he's doing reproduction and having to, repaint some and just reproduce and repaint others. And I got to speak to him about his previous Games and Gears double-ended brush Kickstarter, which we bought 6 sets of brushes as part of the Kickstarter for our group. And I think all of them we gave up on because all of them split and were just terrible, terrible brushes. So Sam, being the great guy he is, he's like, just send me a list of what went wrong and I'll replace everything. And that says a lot. He's willing to stand behind his product. This is a year after the Kickstarter or whatever.
Yep.
So it's good. Yeah, and I'm surprised he remembered us. I mean, we see him every year at TempleCon.
But he sees so many people.
Yeah. But he knew we were the French Canadians and he started talking to us in French in his delightful little French accent.
Yeah. That's one way of saying it.
Hey, that was the best French accent I heard that wasn't yours all weekend.
Was it? Maybe. I know another or one or two other people with French, some French basic
that
I talked to during the weekend, so maybe.
Well, I had someone mangle my name and attempt to pronounce it. And Filion is not a super complex name. Like, you can read it in English and go Filion or Filion or.
Oh, true. And the girl at the first hotel I got Wednesday night wasn't able to pronounce her name. It was all Philemon. So I don't know where she saw a M.
Yeah, that's right. She added. I don't.
She wasn't able to find you in the sim because she just wasn't able to translate. She had the name in front of her on my slip and she wasn't able to find you.
So funny. Like, I thought our two names, mine would be the easiest, but.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Oh, well. What can you do? But yeah, all that to say, Sam, great guy. Great product, and I hope to see more from Games and Gears. Yeah, I mean,
super friendly. So.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. He's definitely super friendly. I guess we'll mention this now. He's actually agreed to come in on the show.
Yep.
So sometime in the hopefully near future, we'll have Sam from Games and Gears on the podcast. He'll Skype in. We'll talk about his product and what he's doing and what his plans are. Let's see, what else we do on Thursday?
That boot was on the same area that the Ninja Division boot was.
Right, so Ninja Division and Hawk War Games. So let's talk about Ninja Division.
So Ninja Division is the new branch from composed of Soda Pop Miniatures and Cypher Studio.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of Relic Knight that went really well for them. They sold a bunch of it. They had the new Relic Knight and the new Super Dungeon Explorer, where only the preview model you could see in the vitrine, the display.
In the display case, yeah.
You couldn't try Deus rules yet, but they showed the model. So they'll be coming quite soon, I hope.
Okay. What else was there? Aside from the little rubber ninja stars they're throwing all over the place.
Yeah, there was a game for everyone who wanted to get in the ninja game, too. So, and they had their usual ninja, how do they call them? The Soda Pop Girls.
Oh, yeah.
Including Marie-Claude Bourbonnais, which is a local fashion model.
Yeah. She does like fashion and
there's another
pin-up shots and cosplay. She's famous for cosplay as well. Yeah. They're in their cosplay costumes and they're looking super cute and Marie-Claude Man, that's all I can say about that. And of course, so also in the same booth as we mentioned before, Hawk War Games was there as well.
And that's where we saw the resistance models.
Yeah, looking good.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And Dave, always a pleasure to talk to. Super cool guy. Works way too hard. I guess that's the problem of every young entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So, you know, you want to be successful, you got to work hard, and he definitely does it. He's also agreed to come on the show and talk to us. Yep. So that'll be cool. We'll see where Hawk War Games is going with their Drop Zone Commander stuff. Now, they're on version 1.1 of the rules. I don't know if a version 2 is in the works for at some point, but they had the Resistance, and they had the new expansion book.
Yeah,
which covered the Resistance and some new units for the other armies. Yeah. And that booth seemed to be doing really well, too.
Yeah, they were always busy.
Yeah. What else was there? Oh, Impact Miniatures. So I picked up some Chibi's Impact. Now, I actually bought pretty much the whole line of Impact stuff last year when I was there, because they just finished their... What started off as a Dungeons & Dragons Kickstarter.
Fantasy Chibis.
Well, it started off as Dungeons & Dragons. It was the original cartoon Dungeons & Dragons characters, but in Chibi format. So for any children of the 80s, they'll remember, you know, the Dungeons & Dragons cartoons with Venger.
And if you don't remember or were too young for that, you can still find them on iTunes and on the web. It's worth just watching the first episode.
It was pretty entertaining, I have to say. I mean, I never had any magic items in D&D that were ever that good. Everyone wanted the laser bow after that, you know. But yeah, anyway, all that to say, cool models. And they did very well with that Kickstarter. And then they launched a second Kickstarter, which I...
was the Asian one.
Yeah, and I don't know how well it did, but they had those models at the event. So.
And they also launched a one that's based around 2. And they had Deuce model also.
Yeah. And then now they're doing a pony Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah. You're so happy.
I may have to pick those up for my wife.
What did you get at the Impact booth this year?
That's what I'm trying to think. So I picked up the Karate Master, who is not Ryu. And I picked up a little Chinese martial arts girl, who is not Chun-Li. And I picked up not Inuyasha. And an evil samurai figure that I couldn't place from what they'd borrowed his IP from.
They called him the Ronin.
I think.
Yeah.
So great little figs. I'm gonna enjoy painting those. They're in the list somewhere.
Yeah. I got from them a little flying pig.
A little
pig with an aviator cap and a rocket pack in the bag.
Yeah, rocket
in the
pig.
Bag. In the back.
And on his back. Yeah. The rocket pig we called it.
Yeah, looks super cool.
Yeah, we had some pretty good pig scores this weekend. Last weekend. And I think that's pretty much what we did. Oh, we
went through a bunch of...
Yeah, we stopped by others, by Heavy Gear as well, said hi.
Stopped at the Game Workshop / Mostly Forge World boot.
Oh, yeah, and I picked up the Demonsmith Force. You're giving me that look. When you were in line at Privateer Press, I went to GW and I picked up our Demonsmiths.
Yes.
Right, because that was the release model for the event.
Yeah, the Chaos Dwarf.
Yeah, pretty cool looking fig.
Oh yeah,
I was pretty pleased with that. I mean, we saw other stuff, but that's what kind of comes to mind.
The main ones.
And then that was end of the day. We walked for 8 hours and then went to dinner and then came back and played some games.
Oh yeah.
So we played a little something called Ants at the Picnic, which was a custom rule set that used these figurines called Army Ants from 1986, I think they said.
Something like that.
Yeah. That Antoine actually remembered and started describing them, and I vaguely remembered. But being a bit older, I hadn't really played with them.
The game wasn't advertised as using dues, but that's what I was picturing.
Yeah, and then it turned out that's exactly what it was.
Came in, they were all pristine and all clean and not broken, and all the weapons for them. Oh, that was so cool.
Yeah, and the premise of the game was that you're playing on a picnic tablecloth, and there's 4 plates with plastic fruit in them, and a basket in the middle with, I think, did the basket have stuff in it?
Yep, fruits too.
And the object was to get your army ants to the fruit and get them off your side of the table through into your ant's nest. And there was a whole bunch of rules of, how much an ant could carry. Big fruits like bananas took 2 ants to carry. Small fruits took 1 ant. The ants, of course, had different weapons. Some had drones. Some had rocket launchers.
There were ninjas.
Machine guns, disappear. Rifles, pistols. You had commander ants or command ants. And they had they could grant extra actions
to the other ends instead of using theirs.
It was a pretty involved, if simple, rules set, and it was a lot of fun. I have to say, I enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, it was really fun.
Even though I was exhausted by the time we got to it, I still had a lot of fun.
I must say, I looked on eBay after that to see if I could get some of these, but. The only one I could find was an old auction, and it was listed for far too much.
Well, yeah, so the person who was running the event, his wife was there, and she said that, I might be misquoting this, I think she said it was $150 for six of them is what the going price was on eBay.
Yeah, ouch.
Which is crazy. These little rubber ants.
But they look so cool.
Yeah, okay, granted. So after our little ant adventure, we met up with David Witek of Garage Hammer fame, and I gifted him some models. Well, gifted Chris Yu some models via Dave Witek, and then gave Dave a limited edition dwarf model.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Garage Hammer is a fantasy podcast.
Yeah, and they're a pretty casual group of gamers, so they do play tournaments, and they play a lot of tournaments, but their main focus is to have a good time and talk hobby and
or kind of game.
Yeah. Exactly. And Dave, great guy. We're playing with his son, Harrison, also known as the Phoenix Prince, and their friend, Matt, yep. who I think he'd also just met at the con, another fan. And we played Hex.
Yeah, by Smirk and Dagger Game.
Yes, which was my first time playing Hex, and I won.
Oh, that's a great game.
It really was. And I really want to try Student Bodies, which was a new game they were showing at Gen Con. We didn't actually get a chance to try it out, so I'll describe it now. And the premise is that you're students in a high school, and the high school's been infested by zombies, and there's a plague going around, and you're infected. And your object is to get to the chem lab, get the cure yourself, get back out without being eaten by a zombie, while trying to fend off your classmates, so you can lock them in the building and call the police and have them all killed.
Yeah, so they slow down the zombies so you have the time to get out.
Yeah, so, and then you have them all killed off. Yeah.
So Smirk and Dagger, do all their games are stabbing your friends in the back. So.
Yeah, that's their motto, I think, yeah. So that was pretty cool. And then after that, it was like midnight or something. We were exhausted from the night before, so we just crashed. Yep. And then it takes us to Friday. So Friday, I started the day with the class with Amy Stegman. It was a color theory class, a couple hours, though it actually finished up in about an hour because she's had done the class a couple times by then and had gotten really fast at going through the material. Interesting class. One of my biggest challenges when I paint miniatures is that I have no concept of color theory and what colors go together. So, it was informative. And it's a theory class, so it wasn't a practical thing. I found it to be quite good.
During that time, I went there the exhibitor hall, and at the Wild West Exodus booth, they had James Wobble, who was painting a bunch of... I don't know if he paints all of them, but a lot of their studio models are painted by him.
I think he... Because looking at the style of everything they had there, I think it's all him.
Yeah. So he was painting... He was there to paint some stuff on display and chatting with the fans, so... I think I stayed there at least an hour. So I had a course like Paul, but didn't have to get tickets for it. And it was about color primer and discussion of how to prep your models and stuff
like that. Well, he's got the painting pyramid, he calls it, right? Yeah. And it's the shaded base coat?
Yeah, shaded base coats and shaded primer too. So it was a really cool discussion, really interesting.
Well, he's got his own way of doing everything, right?
So. Yes. So, and we met him later in the convention, too, and spoke about the his videos.
Yeah.
And so we'll try to get a couple of views to see, and maybe, I don't know, probably not the whole bunch. There's like 50-something.
Or 40-something. It's crazy.
That's crazy, yeah. So I don't have the time to watch all of Dudes for sure.
Yeah, and I'd like to see if we can't maybe talk Mr. Wapland to come in on the show for a bit and talk hobby.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. It's fascinating to listen. I heard another interview by him.
Yeah, fascinating, if a bit crazy. Yeah,
yeah, crazy, but still a good kind of crazy.
Yeah, yeah, fun. It was that whole description of I don't paint like the other painters, and they scare me, and they're scared of me. And so, you know, I keep pushing them, and they keep backing up, and then they realize they're chained to the floor and can't get away. It was just kind of odd.
Yeah, yeah,
fun, but odd. It
was odd, but fun. And also talked with Brendan Palmer from GMM Studio during that time, our friend Steve, or B-Steve on Twitter. Already known him from going to Adepticon, and
right.
He mentioned that we would get there and say hi, which we did. And,
yeah, we talked to him a few times.
Yeah.
And a glorious, glorious display board.
Oh, yeah, he had his Adepticon display board for his Fantasy Army with him.
And if you have not seen what this guy can do, it's worth looking up.
Oh, yeah. He does a DVD, too. He has
two. He has a train one
and
army painting, yeah.
With Cold Mini.
Yeah, seven day army, I think is what it's called.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. And great guy, fun to talk to. He's going to come on the show. We spoke to him. He's going to come on and do a little discussion about the DVDs and about what he does. And, you know, just amazing with the stuff he churns out and the time he puts into it, right? Okay. Well, his display board, he talked, I don't remember how many hundreds of hours it was. It was crazy.
It, like 300 or 400, yeah. Something like that. He estimated he didn't have actual numbers.
And the way he was talking, I guess that's what he does full time.
Yeah, he said he did that for a whole month full time.
Man, don't you wish you could do that?
Yes, yes, I do.
Man, living the dream. Way to go, Brendan. That'll change when he has kids.
Oh, yeah. After that, once Paul came back from his class, we went to see the Gen Con Master Painting Contest entries. And I also entered three models in it. There's two class. They have the open category and the master one. The open is more like a casual format for people who never entered anything. And the master is for the
masters.
And for the masters.
The Meg Maples and Wapples of the world.
Yeah. So looking at the stuff, I found that my painting was at the top of the open entries that were already there. And at the low bottom of the master entries.
So there was a lot of stuff in the master entries that was a lot lower than yours.
Yeah, so I wasn't sure which to enter. And when I talked with the guy that was...
the officiant or whatever?
Yeah, getting the entries and responsable.
Is responsible.
Responsible of getting the stuff in the case. And he told me that if I entered the open and I was judged too high, I would be switched to master anyway. So I entered master. I had three models. I had Nemesis Orphan Mantis. That's a small kid disguised as an insect from the Spanish company Zenith Miniature.
Okay.
They have incredible skulls and really
it's a cute whimsy. Fig.
Yeah, it's a cute fig. I entered it in... I think in two other contests, didn't really get anything, but I tried it. It's one of my better pieces, I think. I entered a Brushfire Capybara Capitan. That one I knew was a lot lower quality, but was what I had best in my display.
I don't really consider that lower quality than your Mantis.
Oh yeah, it is. I'll show it to you after. The metal on it are really good. But the Mantis doesn't have any metal. But when you look at the rest, like
the bends, I guess the blending and stuff?
Yeah, it's not the same level at all. And we could enter two model per category. So those two are in the single. And my third model was for the diorama category. I entered Rivet War Trench Diorama, which I did for a cool mini or not online contest, just for fun. And I brought that one. So... that's why I entered. Do I give the result?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah, so the judging was done for Saturday, but in the end, the Mantis didn't get anything. The singles that were there in the master were incredible. I like my model, but it was not.
So I don't remember who took first. I remember the model was like a rhinoceros man.
That was in the large category.
Oh, okay.
Not in the single.
Oh, right. And that same category Meg Maples was in with her, the Green Knight that she did.
Yeah.
And that came in second there. That's right. It's large.
And we were wondering, there was a chimera with a giraffe head.
Yeah.
That's from Arenorex.
Okay.
There, so we were wondering cockatrice. Where it was coming from. Or a cockatrice?
Yeah, cockatrice.
Isn't cockatrice a chicken head?
Oh, maybe you're right.
Yeah, the chimera is all kind of crazy animals together. The cockatrice is like a giant reptile with the chicken parts.
Right. Sorry.
Yeah, so... So the mantis didn't get anything, the capybara neither, but my trench diorama for Red Wars got a bronze mention. So it's not a third place, because the both contests are judged as open, so you have multiple entries in gold, multiple entries in silver, and multiple entries in bronze. Everything is judged as strats of people of about the same level, and you have a best of category that's also added on top of that. So,
okay,
it wasn't the third, but I still got a mention for a piece that I'm really happy with.
So. Better than a kick in the pants, right?
Oh, absolutely. In the master category, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So, pretty happy with that.
Okay, and what do we do next? Oh, yeah, we went to the panel for You Want to Start a Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Which was funny because we'd already published episode zero by this point. And that was being hosted by a podcast called Under Discussion. And I think they're out of the West Coast. And they do board games, RPGs.
Mostly RPGs.
Yeah. And it's a group discussion format. And pretty interesting folks. You know, they went kind of over the do's and don'ts of podcasting. It turns out we'd basically done all the do's and hadn't really done the don'ts.
Yeah, so we're on the right way, it seems.
Yeah, we seem to be on the right track. And then they discussed their listenership, and we were kind of surprised. So we had, had about 225 listens to episode zero, which, you know, the thing about podcasts is no one knows how many people listen to them, and it's hard to gauge whether or not you're doing well. But using their numbers as a barometer for ours, it seems like we're doing okay for an episode zero that no one's ever heard of. And, you know, hopefully we have some retention and people come back and listen to episode one and episode two and so on and so forth. We're going to keep trying to improve the show, obviously. More equipment's on the way. The one thing we didn't do right was, of course, they said, do not spend money on equipment at first. You know, they're like, we broadcasted for 2 years with nothing but some, you know, cheap mics and whatever hooked up to our PCs. That's not how I approach podcasting at all. I went out and I spent the money and I decided I wanted to do something that had decent production quality right off, so I wouldn't have to reinvest later. And I think it comes through. I think most of the comments we got about our first episode were that we came through clear and we were understandable and that, you know, the sound quality was good. We didn't sound like we're podcasting from the inside of a well.
Yeah. We had one comment about the sounds, and that was the heavy breathing. And that's me.
Darth Antoine. Yeah,
I know. I have an allergies problem and stuff like that, so it's hard to breathe. I'm trying to do better this time. I hope it
Yeah, will, so this time your breathing is better, and I'm the one coughing and choking over here in the mic.
And we're adding new stuff next time, probably, to be able to get even better sound.
Yeah, so we're going to keep working on that, and that's going to keep getting better. So stick with it, guys. It'll be worth it in the end, I hope. So yeah, that you know, super nice guys. Sat around and talked to them for a bit afterwards. You know, they're actually going to be, well, they said they'd be listening to us, so hopefully. And, you know, I'll give them a shout out. You know, if you've got something, you want to listen to a good board gaming podcast, check out Under Discussion. I did, and it was a good listen. Let's see, what else did we do? Oh, one of our, yeah, Antoine's got a smile from ear to ear here. one of the things we really wanted to try at Gen Con was Bushido. And we did. Antoine played a demo game, and I sat there and observed. And it came close, folks. I almost came home with more miniatures that I'll probably never paint.
and I'm the reason you didn't.
Yeah. Antoine, the voice of reason.
Oh, no. I just couldn't settle on a faction. So yeah, Paul decided
to hold off.
To wait for me to know what I want. And we'll do a group order
once
I'm settled. Because
exactly.
There's a bunch of faction I like some of the models, but not all. But you don't need a ton of models. It's like 5 to 12, something like that. It's a really skirmish game format. So I just need to settle on one faction, and we'll do another soon, because I really, really, really like that game.
Oh, it was nice. So for those who don't know, it's a game that plays on a 2x2. Very dynamic. It's designed to mimic that kind of martial arts movie feel.
Japanese-oriented skirmish games, so fantasy.
If the name Bushido didn't give it away. Yeah.
Just in case.
So it's Fantasy Japan. So, you know, there's a monk faction, there's a military faction. The faction I was looking at was the Ito clan, which are a clan that seemed to have made a pact with some sort of serpent deity.
Kami.
So they're all kind of mutating into half serpent, half man. Anyway, gorgeous sculpts, really dynamic and fluid rules, a good production value. Not cheap. You're looking at about $14 a solo. But again, you know, when I looked at it, a 50-point tournament list was a starter and one model.
Yep.
So a starter being $45. So $60 to have a tournament legal force.
Yeah, and the rules are free online.
Yep.
The cards are free online and comes with the models. So you don't have to print. You can have the... buying the models. You have token online. So the only thing you really need to buy are the models.
Yeah, and the rule book, they do have a physical print copy of the rule book.
Yeah, which
production,
I got.
Yeah, and production value is excellent. Worth every penny of the... I think it's about a $45 MSRP.
Yeah, 42.
That was close. And yeah, it was worth every penny. So, gorgeous models. I really encourage people to check it out. That game is going to be something to watch. And hopefully they keep producing more stuff and it keeps growing. Every year, the last year when I went to see them, they had a much smaller booth with much fewer models. So it's growing and you can see it. The booth was twice the size this year. Far from the biggest booth we saw there, but it was a good size. And they had tons more models in inventory. It looks good for them.
So after that, we did as we did on Thursday. We did a bunch of a lot of browsing. Went back to the Privateer Press booth to get stuff I forgot. We also went to the Dark Sword
Dark Sword Miniatures booth. So Dark Sword, for those who don't know, produced a gorgeous line of miniatures. They from generic fantasy to Larry Elmore Dragons. To Game of Thrones miniatures. And they also were selling Reaper Master Series paints and brushes. So I picked up some brushes. I want to try those out. Because I'm looking for a good Kolinsky Sable brush that I can get locally. That's not going to break the bank. You know, as much as I love Rosemary & Company, it's just annoying to have to order from Europe. And the Ichiban Studio brushes will eventually come in and those look good. But they're kind of like the Winsor & Newton Series 7 miniature brushes in that they're short bristled, very pointy. I wanted something a little bit different and a little bit longer. So the Reaper Master Series Kolinsky Sable brushes seem to be like that. I'll give them a try, see what they're like. And I wanted to pick up the liner paints. And liners are kind of like a heavier wash, I guess you could say, designed to do exactly what they sound like, lion models.
Black lining?
Yeah, essentially. And the reason I was interested in them is because when I took the class earlier that morning with Amy Stegman, she was talking about how she uses those as her shading pigments. So she'll mix those into her color, whatever, to build down to a shade. So she's doing her shading.
She's using them as glazes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, so I figured, you know, if she recommends them, I'd try them. I haven't had a chance to try them out yet. But I did kind of play with them to see what the properties of the paint was. And yeah, it's essentially a heavy ink or thinner than a paint. Lots of pigment, high density, very, very dark. It should do some interesting effects if I do some black lining, maybe some, you know, pull out some Infinity miniatures or something.
While Paul was doing his browsing in the paint section of the Dark Sword booth, just in front of it, there was the Miniature Building Authority booth. They do pre-painted resin terrain mostly, But they also add stuff I hadn't seen before. There were small signs, like fantasy sign you would put on in front of an inn or a tavern or stuff like that. So they had packs of 10, all different, some with boots, some with planks. It's different. Really interesting. So I got a pack of dues to try to spruce up my existing buildings.
Okay, and then as we went back to PP, I didn't buy anything, but we looked at stuff. And yeah, that was it. Then we decided to skip out a bit early and try to get dinner, because all the restaurants fill up. Like, as soon as the convention hall closes, it's impossible to get food. So we went for a bit of a walk, went and got some dinner, and then came back and did another painting class. So this one was with Rhonda Bender, and it was intermediate to advanced painting. And it was a lecture class, and talking kind of about what people can do to improve their painting and develop their skills and what challenges they might encounter. I thought it was pretty informative. Rhonda, very, very pleasant woman. And it's hard to say what I took away from it, because it really didn't talk about skills or techniques. It was kind of very high level, just overview.
Yeah.
What did you take away from that class?
I found it interesting. There was a big part of it that was going from a good skill to a competition level mindset.
Right.
Not skill set, but more mindset. How you need to approach your painting to enter into competition, be it online or in person, which are not the same.
Yeah.
If you're going online, you probably want to go for NMM, because true metallics don't
take show up well. Yeah,
just show well for in pictures. So I found it interesting. It was for an advanced level, not necessarily of skills, but of knowledge about.
Yeah, writing. Absolutely. And she did that whole thing where she was talking about criticism and how to take it.
Yep.
And what things can mean when people say things like needs more contrast. You know, what is that person actually trying to say, and what does it mean to paint them into more contrast? So it was interesting, and it was giving some insight into kind of like high level competitive painting.
Yeah. So the only bad part of the panel was the times the time.
Yeah, because it was 9 o'clock, and then I think it started at right 9 to 11. So I know I was struggling around 10 o'clock to stay awake, because you walk all day, you're just exhausted.
Yeah.
I don't know how many miles we walked every day, right? Yeah. So
playing a game at that time wouldn't have been that bad, but getting a lecture.
Yeah. Well, playing a game, your mind's more active, yes. You're more involved.
So
you're not just being talked at, right? Yeah. And even Rhonda was like, found it hard. She's like, not going to do it this time again.
One of the attendees was zoning off in the middle. He left at the middle of the
class. Yeah.
He was. Can you do clue in French? I think you said there was.
Yeah, there's nodding off. He was nodding off.
He was nodding off. So.
Yeah, there's no direct translation for that in English.
So.
Yeah, so on the whole, informative class, yes. Worth the, I think it was $16.
$16.
Yeah, so I think it was worth that.
Yep.
And you know, walk away with a nice handout, you know, several pages talking about different things that people look for when they're judging. And that was the other thing, that she gave a pretty in-depth overview of what judges look for at competition level painting. So it was insightful.
Yep.
Okay, and that brings us to Saturday. So Saturday we started off with a Universal Fighting System Mega Man demo by Jasco.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and that was pretty good. I had a hard time with the demo, but you know, later on we played the game a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty dynamic, pretty fun, and it gives you that kind of video game like super combo breaker feel.
Yeah, I wanted to try that game since the Mega Man board game Kickstarter.
Right.
You could get the tins at the same time, but I backed out of the board game Kickstarter because
the
rule didn't seem interesting enough. The models did, but the board game was too costly to just get some models.
And we can say that in person the models are really, really impressive.
Yeah, and they're better than what they showed during the Kickstarter.
They've had to go several times to revisions to get Capcom's approval.
Forth, yeah, back and forth with Capcom was worth it.
Yeah, they've really got some cool product there.
Yeah.
And the game, like I said, is a very dynamic game, lots of fun.
Yeah. I wanted something that we could play just two players to fill time between.
Yeah, exactly.
Something longer. And
it was a good choice.
It's a good, choice.
And we also looked at, or didn't really look at, because there's no product yet, but we got to talk to the creator of Dead Meat.
Dead Meat Quarantine Zone America.
Yeah.
It's a new miniature game coming by Jasco, the same company that does the UFC Mega Man game. It's going to be a post-apocalyptic zombie game, but it's you're not playing either the zombies and trying to kill the zombies. You're playing survivors faction during the zombie apocalypse. So
yeah.
Zombies are included in gaming, but you're not playing them. They're like a third party that's...
Yeah, and what happens is your opponent actually places zombies to affect you and vice versa. You place zombies to affect him.
Yeah, based on the sound you make.
Yeah, because as you do stuff, you generate sound. Generating sound generates zombies. Your opponent gets to place the zombies. The zombies always move towards you. I think it's 3 inches a turn, you said. They
toward
always,
the closest model. Something
so,
like that.
Towards the closest living model. And you can basically use it to funnel your enemy into areas like to try to corner him and screw him over.
Yeah, the concept is cool, and they add concept arts.
Yeah,
and there's on their Facebook page right now, they have the video they were showing at Gen Con.
Okay.
They have... some pictures of the concept arts. It's on the Dead Meat Facebook page. They have a Facebook page for the
I wasn't sure if you meant Jasco's Facebook or Dead Meat's. Okay.
No, and it's coming on Kickstarter at the end of October. So we'll be able to see what they have. The sculpting is already started. We didn't see anything.
Yeah, we didn't see anything.
They mentioned it. We talked with the creator. So.
And he actually also is willing to come on board.
Yes, and he's really...
Dynamic.
Dynamic.
Well, he's
and
a...
tall. I'm a tall guy, and I was looking up when trying to.
He was like 6'5", maybe more. Least, yeah. And I'm a short guy, so it was even worse for me. I felt like a child.
Well, he's really dynamic. We all felt like a child.
Yeah. So he's a DJ / comedian / game designer. So if you can imagine that combo, and he's also the star of the video.
Yes.
So if you go look at the Dead Meat video, you'll get to see him. And he does that pretty dynamically, too. So you'll get a pretty good impression of what his personality is like. Yeah, so that was a good morning at the Jasco booth. We spent a bit of time there and quite like that. And then Antoine actually had to go off to a Kickstarter panel.
Yes, I mentioned that in the last episode. I'm working on a small miniature project. And I'm listening to a Kickstarter podcast, reading blogs about that. And they had a podcast with a group of either... reviewers, companies who used Kickstarter before successfully or not, and we're talking about that. So, and some of those names I follow online, so I wanted to see how the format will be and what advice they would give. And I did came out with some stuff I didn't previously read or hear. So it was a good investment of my time, and the panel was free too. So.
For $0, it's hard to go wrong, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And they had some big names in the panel, didn't they?
Yeah, but I didn't bring my notes for that, so...
So moving right along. So very informative. Antoine had a great time, and no children were harmed in the making of that panel. So while Antoine was doing that, I was wandering the hall, and I stopped by the Heavy Gear booth again and got a demo of the beta rules for the new edition of Heavy Gear.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, Heavy Gear, produced by a local company, DreamPod 9, it's going to be having its 20th anniversary next year.
Yes.
I first started playing Heavy Gear, 19 years ago. I was one of the original playtesters for the role-playing game. The role-playing game included miniature rules, which were designed to compete with the only other miniature giant mech game out there, which was Battletech. So the rules were far from fast. They were really designed for like 1v1 or 2v2. So super detailed, a blade of armor, had all kinds of math to do, stuff to keep track of. And they evolved. Eventually they came out with Blitz. Blitz sped up the rules a bit, but it was still kind of clunky. And then I guess that was out for a couple of years, and then they came out with the Field Manual, which had like a revised set of rules, which were much quicker.
It was... still pretty close to Blitz, though.
Yeah, but they streamlined some of it.
And they mostly rewritten what wasn't clear in the Blitz rules.
Yeah. And that's, sadly, DreamPod 9's biggest failing is their writing. They have some great ideas, but they lack, I mean, it's a small production house, right? So they lack editors. And sometimes I think they rush to market because they need to try to get stuff out to generate revenue. So it hurts them. But the game had a very tactical feel and some interesting models. And, you know, I really wanted to like that game.
And it's so
I really wanted to like the game. And I actually wrote a giant post for the Club Chaos blog at one point about it. And it never got written. I never got posted, I should say, because of the fact it was kind of critical. It was honest and it tried to be objective. But it was critical on the whole. And like I said, I collect the game. I played the game. But there were some big problems with it. There was lots of math. There was rules that you had that you didn't know when to use them. You know, they talk about line of sight, which they didn't call line of sight. They called it lock or whatever. And you had line of sight, but you didn't necessarily have to have line of sight. And there was, like, detection and sensors and ECM and ECCM. And it was, you know, super detailed, but it just bogged down.
Yeah.
And, you know, then they hired a friend of ours, Dave McLeod. And David started out there as one of the casters. He was casting models for them. And then eventually evolved into more of a game design role. And he basically rewrote the rules from the ground up, trying to keep as much of the theme and that tactical feeling without having to have a rule set that was really, really cumbersome. And I think he did a good job. The beta rules, you know, from what we played and what I've read, and I have to admit, I haven't finished reading the book. I haven't had much time. They seem to really speed up the game. There's not a lot of extra crap in there. You know, I don't think it's going to get bogged down. And I think the game will scale up better than it did. And when we played the demo, I felt it was pretty streamlined. I don't know what you thought, Antoine.
Yeah, I had the demo the following day on Sunday. And I also found that it was a lot easier to follow what you're doing. The bonus and matters to your dice, the locking with the terrain, everything was simpler and easier to follow. I had miniature for the game, but nothing for full force. And now, having played that, I do want to just get a box of two more and be able to play the game for real and try it out. Giving it a chance for real.
Yeah, that's the other thing they changed. I mean, not just the rules, they also changed army construction.
Oh, yeah.
So that's much simpler now, much more open-ended, and you can, you know, play a cool theme force without, you know, trying to break your neck.
Yeah, the army construction rules.
I could go into all the changes, but...
A software of their own just to be able to build an army. There were so many choice spreads over so many books and so many options, so many level of army building.
And you could have a rule that was in one book, and the only way to learn that rule would be to buy the whole rule book because they never printed it on their website. They never did anything. And there was no, like, universal special rules list. So it was like veterans. What does veteran do? Well, veterans in whatever book that is, and if you don't own that book, well, that's too bad.
Yeah. And it was also pretty restrictive. Some type of squads couldn't be played with another except if you were playing
certain types of games.
Sub-list at X priority level. And
yeah.
It was almost impossible.
The list building had something called priority levels, which basically determined what composition was like. Now, I think if you're a 40K player, think of your force organization chart changing depending on the type of mission you were playing. Except not that simple. But
Not that simple at all.
And yeah, anyway, the changes are so drastic, it's impossible to go over them all, but just to say it's worth checking out. The rules are for free, free download. We actually bought the printed copy just to make it easier to flip back and forth. And they gave us a $5 coupon off because we took the demo, so it cost us $10. We got the printed rulebook. They're going to be doing a Kickstarter later on in the year.
Yep.
To try to get this new edition printed.
For the 20th anniversary.
For the 20th anniversary, yep, which they're going to launch. They're going to launch at Gen Con next year. And I hope it goes well for them.
Yeah, I hope so.
You know, they're a bunch of good guys. Robert and David and all the king at DreamPod 9. You know, they've got heart. They've stuck with it for a long time. It'd be nice to see them do well. And I think they've got something this time that, you know, if it comes to market, we'll be successful.
Yeah, I think so. Being there, I also bought some, not stencils, but...
Decals.
Decals for the military police. I play the MP... in the south faction, yeah, mostly. And all the lettering that goes on dues is pretty hard to do.
Well, the game's 11 millimeter, I think, right?
Yeah, so that, yeah. So it all freehand small. Would be
the gears are small.
And they add a decals specially for the faction I play. Yeah. So I got that with the rulebook.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think your gear is about a 15-foot tall mecha.
Is it that much?
Well, I think the medium-sized ones are 15. The small ones are like 12.
Yeah.
And the models are about the size of a Space Marine.
Yep.
So, give me an idea. And then we went by
Game Salute Boot.
And played the Duel Betwixt Us.
Oh, yeah. That's another one I saw previously.
Yeah, we looked at the Kickstarter for that one.
Yeah, but it was the Kickstarter, the shipping was more than the
game.
The game itself. So there was a way to get it from your local store, but the store had to be registered with Game Salute, and it was complex.
Yeah, it was a
and
problem.
The timing wasn't right with the store to be able to get it in time. So I was waiting for it to come out, and being at a Kickstarter, there were delays, and it finally came out for Gen Con, or just
before, I think.
So we tried it there.
Yeah, and we had a blast.
Oh yeah.
Antoine, stopped me as always, because that's the way our games go.
Well, it's a game of manly duel in the Victorian era.
Victorian era, yeah.
Yeah, and Paul was playing a girl. So how can he be manly playing a girl with a tiny hammer? So I was twisting my mustache, playing my cards, and
Yeah. The tiny hammer thing, I don't know why the girl has a tiny hammer in the picture of the card.
Yeah.
Just to tell you what type of game this is, right? You have a bunch of characters that have cards that represent them, and you pick a character. And it doesn't make a difference what character you pick, because it doesn't actually do anything.
You don't even use the card.
It's just in the game, so you can, and then you can pretend to be that person.
Yeah. You have three type of cards. There's the duels, there's the ingots.
Which is like currency.
It's
the resource you collect, and you collect it.
Miners.
Yeah, you have miners to collect the currency.
And the miners admire your manliness, and the more manly you are, the more miner you get.
Exactly.
The more miner you have, the more
resources you can gather. The faster you gather resources.
And the last type of card, so there's more entry, are the equipment cards. So
the
equipment cards, you have the handle of a weapon, of an armor, of a shield, of anything.
Yeah, and you mine the ingots to build the weapons.
Spaces on the card to reproduce the weapon, and that's how many ingots you need to fill. And you have different types of ingots, bronze, silver, gold, which are worth different points and do different damage level.
Yeah.
And so you create your weapon, which can be anything. You can have a tiny hammer like Paul had. There's a weapon for that. Claymores, two-handed weapons, hammers, war hammers. Shield. You can get a cod piece. I had a well-armored cod piece. And depending on the duel you roll, you flip. You might be playing with only slashing weapon. You might be playing a brawl, so you can bring a weapon, only armors, and you can attack with your armor instead of just blocking. So you could be beating your opponent with a golden cod piece.
Yes, and you may have to compare bicep sizes in the middle of the duel.
Yeah, at least
I won that duel.
It didn't do anything for me. So it's a pretty fun game. The only drawback is it's only two player. So
yeah, so
I hope they might come with an expansion to add more players.
I can only imagine the chaos that would happen if we had more players than that.
But I bought that one after the demo. So
yeah. So then after that demo, we went and we bought the Mega Man collector's tins. Yes. So I got a Mega Man. You got Proto Man. And we went back to the Badger booth to pick up a set of Minotaur paints, the complete set, which they had for, I think it was $100 at the end, for Yom.
Yep.
And we got there, and all they had left was the demo set. They'd sold everything else out, like all their airbrushes, all their paints, and their rack had been pillaged. So I bought their demo set on the condition that I could only come back and get it on Sunday afternoon. And I think that was about it. Then we had, went for dinner. And then afterwards, came back to the convention center to collect your minis from the
painting contest.
Yeah,
so I got dues, And being on my way, I went to the Iron Arena section of the gaming hall. I had brought my Pharaohs, 35 points of Pharaohs, to get a game with a guy I knew from TempoCon. So getting there, he was not there already, so I got a game with Brian. I don't have his last name. So got overall in the night, got three games of War Machine Hordes, playing my piggies against Brian, Tom from Andalem. They weren't present at the...
At Gen Con, yeah.
As a company, but Tom, being not that far, got there as
attended.
A player.
Attended, yeah. As and a gamer.
I got also a game with Scott, so three good games, three fun games. The pigs are always fun to play. So.
I saw you playing Scott. He was shocked and horrified at what those pigs could do.
Oh, yeah. People who don't play against them often are surprised by how much you can do with so bad models.
Yeah, well, that unit of whatever they were there that tore apart
the Slaughter,
the Carnivian. Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah,
that and your movement thing, where every time you killed something, you got to move an inch.
Yeah, that's
so you just tore through his whole line.
Carver feet let you move 1 inch each time you kill something.
Yeah, because you tore through his whole infantry line. He had nothing he could do. That was crazy.
He placed exactly the way I needed him to be able to win through his whole line during a single turn.
Well, when you don't know what the models do, right? Yes. You make mistakes like that.
Yeah.
Hopefully I learned something from that watching. So hopefully I don't do that when we start playing.
Yeah. And that was about it for that day, except we don't mention all the restaurants and place we ate at, but after that day, we wanted to drink something before going to the room, have a small snacks.
Yeah.
And it was late, so most of the stuff was already closed. So we went to something that was close to the hotel, which is Dick's Last Resort. And we didn't know that when we went there, but that's the theme of the restaurants is... Paul would say it better than me. I'm missing words in English for that. I'll pass him.
Their theme is that they're jerks. That's basically what it is.
They're dicks.
They're dicks, yes. And the premise is that basically you go in, and it's like your last resort. Like, you have no place else to go, so you go there. And basically, the waiting staff abuses you. And you pay money for this for some unknown reason. Apparently, this is the theme of the place. And we didn't realize that when we went there. We just thought our waiter was a jerkwad.
Yeah.
And it turned out he was just doing his job.
But we didn't know that.
Which makes me happy that I didn't really penalize him too much on the tip.
Yeah. But if you don't know that before coming in, and it's not advertised like that, we probably missed it. There might be something that...
Was it a warning, our staff will act like jerks? Yeah, yeah, I don't know. I didn't see anything like that either.
So... All the time we were there, we weren't sure. So, if you go...
Yeah, expect to be treated terribly.
No, you're going to be treated
The food will terribly. Come fast.
Yes.
The service will be quick.
Yeah.
But you'll be treated terribly while they're doing it.
Yeah. So, I think they expect you to fight back. And I think...
Yeah.
It's a team.
They must... I'm sure we're not the only people that go in there and not realizing this.
Oh, no, I'm sure.
So, I'm sure those waiters and waitresses get torn into by some people. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'd put myself through that again.
No. Or if we go there again because we don't have a choice, at least say it to the waiter and say, don't bother, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if they'll do it, but don't bother trashing us for nothing. We're not there for that.
Yeah, exactly. We're Canadian.
And that's it for Saturday.
So that takes us to Sunday, which by this point we're pretty much exhausted. We've got nothing left to give, and there's only one day left to go. So, we went back to the hall. Antoine did his heavy gear demo, which we've already spoken about, so we won't bother going over that again. And he picked up, like he said, his stencils and the heavy gear beta book. Then we went shopping for some card boxes to put our Mega Man cards in to keep them safe and secure on the trip home.
Yeah, because they come in a tin, which is a lot bigger than the cards.
Yeah, so they slam around inside, so you end up with... some bent corners and stuff if you're not careful. And we stopped by the Games and Gears booth again. And
they had a special.
Yeah, last day special. So basically, the resident taverns they brought as terrain, they didn't want to take back with them to wherever it was going. So they cut them in price by like half.
Yeah, at least half.
So I paid $40 for this giant resin, you know, in piece.
That doesn't fit in any of the luggage we have.
Yeah, that was the real trick, because I only brought a carry-on.
And I know I did too much ninja shopping for my own good, so what I had didn't fit in my luggage either, with notwithstanding the giant inn.
Yeah. So, but, you know, we picked it up anyway, and I put it aside there, and I went back to pick it up later on in the day. And we did manage to get it home with some creative packing.
Oh, yes, we did. I had to buy a bag, a miniature bag, by Battle Foam.
Battle Foam, you bought the Mantic bag.
I wanted to maybe get the... They have an air bag that's made to carry as a carry-on, but it...
Too big, too expensive.
The price was good with the foam, but without the foam, it would have cost me so much to get the foam.
It wasn't locally. Worth it.
It wasn't worth it. So I went for a small bag that was just the right size for what we had to fit, which is a Mantic bag, like you said.
And it used the foam you already have trays for,
right? Yeah, it used the same foam as the Cool Mini or Nut bags that I already have two of. So it was a perfect size, and I'll need maybe two or three trays to fill that one, so it won't be a problem.
Yeah. We spent a lot more time talking to Mr. Waffle.
Yep.
We sat down with him and talked to him for like at least another hour. What a fascinating guy. I really hope we get him on the show.
Yeah.
Lots of fun. Great to discuss with. And some very interesting ideas about miniature painting.
Yeah.
Because he comes from a traditional artistic background. He painted with watercolors before. And he brings a lot of that to how he paints his miniatures.
Yeah. And you had also a technical discussion with him about the way to distribute his courses. Because he did a Kickstarter for DVDs, but some people want to download them, but the size is so big, it's hard to get them. So we were speaking with him a lot about the course, and Paul, being in the tech side of the business, had some discussion with interesting point.
Because he was duplicating. So what you can do, one of the things that he'll do for you, is you can buy a USB key and send it to him, and he'll put your videos on USB key instead of DVD. But he copies, you know, if you buy 10 videos, he copies his 10 4 gig videos onto your USB key, and he does one USB key at a time. So I asked him why he wasn't using a USB duplicator. And he looked at me with like these big eyes, like, what do you mean? So yeah, they make devices you can plug a USB key into and duplicate to multiple keys, you know, 4 keys, 8 keys, whatever. And it was like I told him Santa Claus actually existed. So I'll have to send him an email, send him some links to some stuff to help him out there. Because a super great guy, and anything I do to make his life easier, I'll do, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So we went wandering around. We went down through the Entrepreneur Alley part of the show.
Yeah, I wanted to see that part of the exhibit all weekend, but didn't have time. The wall is so big. There's a bunch of stuff I didn't have time to see anyway.
Yeah.
But those being the small companies, the tiny companies at the far end of the halls, I wanted to see what they had, what kind of stuff they had.
And we found a little gem there.
Oh, yes.
So we came across Stonehaven Miniatures. And they've produced a line. They have some papercraft terrain.
Yep. They're releasing it right now, yeah. I think.
And it comes in two forms, either
sepia
or color.
Yeah, or color.
But they produce a line of miniatures, which I think they funded through a Kickstarter as well.
Several Kickstarters.
And it's a line of dwarves and gnomes.
And halflings, I think.
Are there halflings there too?
Yeah.
Anyway, small miniatures, extremely well detailed, full of character and fun. We picked up several each.
Yeah.
We got the dwarven ranger who's wearing a pig's.
Oh, like, yeah. It's so cool. It's the model we both got. The
yeah.
only model we both got. I got a jackalope.
Yeah, it's jackalope.
Tiny, tiny, tiny.
I got the undead dwarf. Didn't you get the undead dwarf as well?
I got the undead dwarf. I don't think you have it.
I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, yeah, it's one of the ones I got.
We won two.
And I got the dwarven king, which I thought was cool. And I got the female dwarven druid, who's got the little fawn or whatever on her base. I think that was it. I picked up 5 models in total.
Okay. I got a small entling, like a tiny wood construct.
Something like
that. So the jackalope, the undead dwarf, and the...
These models were like $4.50 each or something. Yeah. They were super cheap. Yeah. Small, obviously, but cheap. And then they threw in a free troll figure because we bought so much.
A giant troll with dwarven
features. Yeah. And they're going to be starting a Kickstarter, another one.
For their all half-orcs.
Half-orcs, yes. Yeah. And I saw some concept art. Really cool. Yeah. Really cool. I wish them nothing but luck. Amazing small company. And even, I'm trying to remember her name, the pro painter from Dark Sword.
Jessica Raymer? No.
It's Jessica something, yeah. She was there picking up a bunch of the gnome models and stuff. Yeah. They're super impressive little figures. And, those people deserve all the success in the world.
Yeah. And on Sunday, the exhibitor all closed early.
Yeah, four.
At four instead of six, so...
And Antoine's an awesome guy, so he volunteered to help Ninja Division with Teardown, because he's...
Well, he's, I'm a volunteer in the Ninja Corps, so...
So he didn't demo all weekend, but he felt he could help doing Teardown.
Yep. And Russ, who was in charge of all the volunteer stuff at Ninja Division, is a friend now. I've met him at TempoCon several times. We always chat for a while, and I've done volunteer for work for different companies, and he's always there at the same time. So,
yeah. So you've got a long-standing relationship with him.
So I wanted to give a
So that was cool. And I was having some trouble. I have a bad knee, so it was giving me a lot of trouble. So I wouldn't rest in the room for a bit. Then I came back later on the day to see if I could meet up with Antoine. So I left at 4:00. I came back around 5:00. Antoine, I think, only got out of the hall around 6:15 or something.
Yep. I was there a bit over 2 hours.
So it was no big deal. I was going to sit there. I had a bench. I was sitting in the hall waiting. And then it happened.
And Paul had some interesting discussions with what I would call a conspiracy theorist, maybe.
Oh, yeah. So this gentleman, whose name I don't recall because I don't think he ever told me, comes out of the convention hall.
He probably blanked it on his card.
Yeah. And he sits down next to me. And I'm minding my own business. I'm on my phone. And then he just starts talking. And it's kind of random at first. He's like, oh, you know, they turned off the AC in the convention hall. And I looked at him. I said, well, yeah, they do that because they open the loading dock doors, which are at the back of the hall. So there's no point in putting AC on. If all those doors are open, it's just wasting electricity, right? So, you know, that's normal. He goes, yeah, but now the inside of the hall is the same temperature as outside. And it was quite warm that day. It was very humid. And so he came out and he was, you know, gamer-sized. So on the large side, and he was covered in sweat. I'm like, okay, yeah, that sucks. Yeah, no wonder you wanted to get out of the hall. And I went back to my phone. And then he starts, like, you know where else they did this, right? I'm like, no. He goes, 20 years ago at Macworld and wherever that was, Boston or something. I'm like, okay. And then he went on. And then I got about 15 minutes of Macworld and what they did wrong there 20 years ago. And then I got how he worked for a company that had computers, and the computers would always get stolen at trade shows, and that's because the trade show security guards all worked for the mob because the unions are crooked. So they had to install secret cameras, and they hired their own guard, but the union didn't like that, but they got it approved, and then they figured the guard would get killed, so they put a secret camera in to watch the guard in the booth. And I was like, okay. It
went on and on and on.
And then it suddenly turned into... You know, I've hacked every computer in the world. I've broken into the Pentagon, the phone systems, and you know, I don't have an identity. I pay for all my medical services by cash. They have no record of me. I don't exist. You know.
And there was something about the Canada Customs.
Yeah, yeah. So he went on and on about how he doesn't exist. And the only problem with that is, you know, I'm always the terrorist when I go through airports. They always stop me because I'm not in the system. They don't know why. And then you go to Canada, and they say you're searching your car, but they're not searching your car. They've got you in a room. What they're really doing is they're monitoring your pupil dilation, your body temperature, you know, your brain waves or whatever, and they're looking to see if you're lying. So he's like, the way to trick them is you have to pretend that you're annoyed, but not too annoyed, because then the system will detect that you're making it up, that you're acting. So you have to pretend to be mildly perturbed that they've stopped you. And after a couple hours, they have nothing on you, so they let you go. Now, what made this funny is my sister works for Canada Customs, and I'm sure she's never monitored anyone's brainwaves and or facial expressions. Or check their pupil dilation via remote scanner or whatever that he thought they were using.
You should ask her. Yeah. Just to be sure.
Maybe I'll see her on the weekend. Maybe I'll ask her that.
That's probably something she doesn't have the right to tell you.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Top secret. And then, of course, one of his friends comes out of the hall. And I'm thinking, oh, thank God. He's going to go off with his friend. I'm saved. No. No. No, in fact, he and his friend start a 30-minute debate on which is better, Coke or Pepsi. Including another conspiracy theory about how Coke uses mentally handicapped people in their surveys to throw the numbers because mentally handicapped people prefer Coke. So, and how the guy has two scientific studies and a documentary on the subject. Yeah.
Interesting discussions.
Yeah, yeah. And then I'm texting Antoine this time going, save me. Oh God, save me, please. Come quick. So eventually he shows up. And we, you know, I use an excuse and I leave.
Yeah, the first thing I say, I'm hungry to just get Paul out of there.
Yeah, it was bad. I was scared for my life. I won't deny it. It was pretty horrible. So yeah, that was my last day at Gen Con. That was how I finished the event with the full geek exposure.
Yeah, strange ending.
Yep. Yep.
So after that, it was. We got dinner, we played Tetris to try to fill our luggage for our early
flights.
Early flights.
Played some Mega Man.
Played some Mega Mans.
Yep.
So, and that's about how the trip ended. Oh, yeah, on the way back, I met the owner and sole employee of Scorpio Masqué, which is the board game Quebec company.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't hear that.
So, chatted with him on the way back and in the bus too, so it was interesting to see how his con went. Being there for himself for the show, he's carried by ILO,
okay,
distributed by ILO. But being there, he can represent himself, his games more. So it was interesting to see the business side.
That's pretty cool. No, you didn't tell me about that, so that's interesting. My interesting takeaway that I show everyone about the con when they ask me about it is I show them the price list from the Ram for the shirts. So the Ram Brewery is a restaurant that's fairly well known at Gen Con because it themes itself after War Machine every Gen Con, and the menu becomes War Machine themed.
Which is a pain to navigate.
Yeah, because you know you don't know what the Borka's soup is, right? Yeah. So they also have every year a limited edition T-shirt. Which features, you know, their logo on the front and something Privateer Press related on the back. So we had to go pick up some shirts for people, and I wanted to get one. And they have a sign up with the shirts and the sizes and the prices. And, you know, we're looking at the list, and all we could do was laugh because they'd sold out of 5X, 4X, 3X, 2X. All they had left was XL and smaller.
Yeah.
Which you know, like, that's a gamer con.
Yeah.
That's a gamer con right there. That's how you describe gamers. But yeah, overall, a lot of fun. You know, enjoyed spending the time with Antoine, as always. And, you know, maybe, I don't know if I'll make it to Gen Con next year, but I'm definitely looking forward to my next convention with Antoine.
Me too. That should probably be TempleCon if the baby doesn't show up early.
The baby can come to TempleCon, that's fine.
That's good. That's true. I'll bring Mary. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out.
I don't think my wife will agree with that.
It's a good try. Oh, you never know. Okay, well, I guess that wraps it up for another episode. It's the end of episode one.
I think this one is going to be long.
Well, I mean, once I've edited it down, I'm sure it'll be okay. It shouldn't be too long. So, see you in 2 weeks, Antoine.
See you in 2 weeks, Paul. Bye, geeks.
Bye.